You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
In the booth with us right now, we have Professor Stephen Robertson from the University of Otago's Department of Paediatrics and Child Health here to talk about Māori genomics and public health, as well as his talk at Umbrellas later today. Good morning to you, Stephen. How are we doing?
Hey, good morning, Zach. Kia ora, everyone.
You having a solid morning so far?
Oh, yeah, it's been pretty good.
That's the plan, man. Are you enjoying the sort of resurgence of spring so far?
Oh, yeah, I love that. I've just come back from overseas, and it's good to be back in this crispy, edgy mornings, but looking forward to some sunshine and more warmth.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Where were you about overseas?
All over the place, but most recently in outback Australia.
Ah, how'd you find it?
Oh, it's amazing out there.
Yeah.
Few people, lots of kangaroos. And, you know, I'm a medic, and lots of health challenges out there. They do it really well over there.
I imagine just sort of the proximity to health services is quite a struggle for a lot of people.
That's the challenge. There's no shrinking those big distances. Mm. But those planes, they fly all over rural Australia.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you are a genomics expert. Are you more on the side of nature or nurture?
Oh,
very God. Simplified question.
We're starting in deep, aren't we? It's both, Jack. How about that?
That's too nuanced for the people.
No, I think, I tell you what, there's some stuff which is genetic. You think about identical twins and how I'm a geneticist. I have trouble telling them apart.
Mm-hmm.
That tells you your face is genetic. Sorry. Put the cosmetics away. Your face is genetic. But what's not? Wow, there's heaps which is not. A lot about our behaviour, the choices we make.
Mm-hmm.
There's mixtures of genetics and environment in there. But, you know, there's very little which is not genetic, put it that way. There's very little which genetics doesn't have a play in.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about what genomics is. I've seen multiple definitions of it, but in terms of public health genomics, that's the field of study concerned with the impact of genes and their interaction with behavior, diet, and the environment, and all of those factors that impact on the population's health. Is that correct?
Well, that's true, but it's not just the population too, because you think about it, we're measuring people's individual genomes in this respect too.
Mm-hmm.
So at one level, it's personalized.
Mm-hmm.
At another level, it's population. And we're not going to get anywhere. We're not going to get to the bottom of all of our maladies unless we actually begin to think at the level of the individual. Because one thing genomics has told us is that all individuals are not the same.
That is true, but certainly there are trends within demographics.
There's no doubt about it.
There's no doubt about that. How do genes interact with behavior, diet, and the environment?
Well, that's a million-dollar question.
Please tell me.
There's this thing called epigenetics, which your listeners might have heard of, which is basically where your double helix gets chemically modified. It gets methylated, and that can switch genes on and off. And there's indications that actually environmental influences can stick those methyl groups onto DNA and alter the function of genes.
Mm.
So that's one example of how it happens. But, you know, DNA is not isolated. It sits in the middle of your cell and it does its thing. But there's the cytoplasm, the cellular milieu that sits around it, which is continuously sensing the environment, and that impacts upon DNA.
Mm. When we're talking about environment, are we talking about social environment as well?
Well, yeah, social environment is an example. In a coarse way, people have sort of measured, say, how stress can influence your genetic programs. And that's all through, say, cortisol,
mm-hmm.
stress hormones.
Mm-hmm.
Our behaviour is manifested in those sorts of coarse ways. I think there's going to be more nuance in it there than that, though. You know, it's not just all adrenaline and cortisol. There's going to be a whole mixture of things that we're not really over yet. We don't really understand it.
We're in the forest. We can't see the trees quite yet.
Look, I think there's a huge amount of it. Look, we're going to be shown to be in the Stone Age eventually. You know, we can't be too hubristic about where we're up to, how much we understand in this area.
Mm-hmm.
We're just beginning.
Now, Aotearoa is currently a little bit against genetic technologies when it comes to the food we grow and eat. But are the policy settings for genetics research around public health a bit different?
I think there is enthusiasm for it. You know, it's a little bit ironic, I think, that we have this moratorium against genetically modified organisms in our environment. But there's one exception, and that's human beings.
Mm.
There are dozens and dozens, perhaps hundreds, of human beings walking around the street who are genetically modified, because that is an exception under our laws. And I am a believer, actually, that some forms of genetic modification are safe. They're ready to go. They've been well beta tested overseas. Mm. And I think the evidence is in. And we should have a little bit more confidence about using those tools.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sure, not everything. Let's not go all the way.
Mm.
Let's
not give
cautious.
People third arms and legs. But
yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we don't want to go crazy. But we've been too conservative, I think, and it has held us back in some areas. I think, you know, it is time to liberalise.
Well, let's talk about the effects of liberalising genomics when it comes to public health. What benefits can that bring?
Well, I think if we understand our personal genomes, we understand what choices we should make as individuals. You know, one diet doesn't fit all. One exercise regimen doesn't fit all. One way of, ordering our day when we sleep and when we rest and when we're active and when our brain's at its best. We all know that that's an individual thing. And that's going to have genetic components to it. So reaching down into those and studying those factors, I think, is going to be transformative in terms of our understanding of self.
Mm.
But in terms of the things which are available now, we've got to start with a reference. We've got to start with what is actually standard sequence of our DNA code, because when we begin to sequence people's genomes to understand the variation that sits within them, we've got to understand what the dictionary is to be able to call out where the different spelling lies. And that's where my research has been focused over the last 8 years.
Mm. Reading that dictionary.
Building a dictionary.
Yeah.
Building a dictionary, because not for myself, because I've got Western European ancestry, that's been done by other people. But for other New Zealanders, Māori, Pacific people, mm-hmm. it hasn't been done.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've spent the last 8 years, my colleague Phil Wilcox in Maths and Stats and I have been building this dictionary in collaboration with Māori communities all over the nation.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a huge privilege, mm-hmm. amazing ride.
I want to start talking about that. I did a little bit of research on Te Mata Ira, the Guidelines for Genomic Research with Māori, which describe various cultural values and aspects of tikanga necessary to engage Māori, hapu, iwi and whānau when doing genomic research. In conjunction with those guidelines, Te Ara Tika Guidelines for Māori Research Ethics, Te Mata Ira stresses the importance of recognising different aspects like whakapapa, tapu, mana, kaitiaki, taonga and more in the context of genomic research. What effect have these frameworks had when it comes to ensuring that Māori genomics data is gathered safely and in accordance with Te Ao Māori?
Yeah, look, it's foundational, that stuff. It was really rich. It was amazing that it was 2016 before that got put together, because this stuff is centuries old.
Mm.
And the Western paradigm is to be individual-focused, right? You've got your genome, you've got control over it, you can decide what to do with your genetic information. And sure, that does sort of transport to some degree. But Māori recognise this four-dimensional dependencies that lie around what you should think about when you give somebody a sample for research, or what you should do with your DNA sequence if it's been sequenced and decoded.
Mm.
And those thinkings are transgenerational. They're horizontal across existing generations, and they're looking into the future as well. So that stuff embedded in Te Mata Ira talks about that, and it talks about a mode of having and beginning conversations with Māori communities where this culture and this frame is embedded as just the way of thinking. So for someone like me, who's got a European lens on the world and a European upbringing, it's foundational. It's the place to start.
Mm-hmm.
You should not go anywhere near this sort of research without having those types of understandings if you're working with Māori communities.
Mm-hmm. And how have those frameworks ensured, I guess, sort of cultural safety when it comes to Māori genomes?
Oh, so there's a few very practical things we rolled out. We co-designed this with Māori communities, of course. So they asked for the samples to be treated with the same respect that you would treat them, treat the very persons they came from. So a recitation of karakia. We had to send the samples over to Australia to get sequenced, but there was a promise that they would all come back once finished with,
mm-hmm.
and they have.
Mm-hmm.
It's all back here now.
Mm-hmm.
And once the data was extracted, once the DNA was sequenced and we had that data in our hands, the sovereignty of that data sits with the donor. sits with the community from whence it came. And so there's no proprietal sort of claim on what we've extracted. It's a gift to roll into this resource so that other people may benefit in terms of their healthcare. But the sovereignty still lies with the donors, with Māori communities.
Mm-hmm. Do you think if we applied some of those principles more broadly that our genomic research would be in a better place just for everyone?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of richness and a lot of wisdom that sits behind those cultural practices. But I wouldn't want to order one culture above another, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
I think if people learned about them, their perspectives would be enriched. They might not adopt them, but their perspectives would be broadened and enriched. So there are many people who might donate their biological samples and their DNA sequence as an open gift to the world, right? Put it on the web, do what you want with it, do good things with it.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
That's the intention.
And that is actually the paradigm which a lot of Western science has run with in genomics in my field.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gone okay for those individuals. A lot of stuff has been discovered, but you might say they threw a lot of caution to the wind in doing that, and so it was up to them. It was a personal preference. So I agree with you. Awareness of these other cultural perspectives will bring richness, perspective, and wisdom to the field. No doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all.
No, that's very, very fair. Now, most of the genomic data we have at the moment come from European/Asian samples. As you mentioned before, you're building a dictionary to understand the, Māori genomics.
Yeah.
And I guess a few risks come from importing data from populations and applying that generally. That includes things like underdiagnosis, misdiagnosis, harm treatments. How do we bring precision to genomic healthcare for folks with Māori whakapapa and ensuring cultural safety?
Yeah, good question. Well, I think the analogy of language is a really good one, right? That if we travel the world, even to English-speaking countries, there are differences in the way that English is spelt, pronounced, and understood. Like, we use words here in Aotearoa where, you know, some people will roll their eyes and be a little bit surprised. Like, we call other people mates. We talk about an eraser as being a rubber.
Mm-hmm. Or a Lux is a vacuum. That's a Southernism. I grew up with that.
All that sort of stuff. So there are these differences, right, across the English-speaking world. And so that you might say that actually we've got that intuitively and inside our head. But other people would say, I need a dictionary. I need to understand that. I need a dictionary for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not talking about sort of transcendent, sort of profound changes in the genomes of people with Māori ancestry. But a significant small percentage of it is different. And if that's different, and we're checking the spelling of people in diagnostic tests, you know, yes or no tests, tests which say, yeah, you've got a predisposition to a disease or you don't, we want to get that right.
Mm.
And so we're going to have an error rate, and it's an error rate which is not insignificant if we use the wrong dictionary. And so Phil and I and our colleagues across Māoridom have built this thing. And it's now being used for that purpose, and it makes a difference.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Where does the treaty sit in, the genomic gathering of Māori data?
So it's foundational, isn't it? And if you pause to think about what we're dealing with here, we're talking about the genomic variation embedded across Māoridom. It's a tō'onga of the deepest significance, and that's why it's been such a privilege to actually do this project. And so when, Article 2 said all treasured things remain yours and yours to govern and yours to look after, Article 2 is surely applicable very, very directly to your genetic blueprint.
Mm. That is you. People who have come before you as well. It's whakapapa, it's everything.
It's huge. It's, as I say, it has that dimensionality to it.
Mm-hmm.
The past, the future, and the present.
Now, I know you're pretty strapped for time as you're going to teach a class very shortly, but are there any kind of policy measures you'd recommend that we can look into to put in place that might protect people from genetic discrimination in our healthcare system?
Yeah, look, there's one big thing that's been in the news recently, and that is that insurance companies can actually sort of disbar a person from being insured or heavily load their premiums if they chose to get their genome analysed for some, you know, pretty frightening susceptibilities, cancer and things like that.
Dementia and all sorts.
Yep. And, the government went well down the track towards actually writing this, and then they pulled the plug very recently. They said they were too busy. They were getting very near it. And my colleagues in Auckland in particular, but also a lot of people in the rare diseases and community support group community were very keen to try and nail this issue.
Mm.
And I think it's got to be done.
Mm-hmm.
We very nearly got there. And I think it won't be far away, but it'd be good to see that sealed off.
Cool. Well, hopefully that's something that we can see happen in the future. I want to thank you for your time and coming on the program, Stephen. Do you have any final words for our lovely listeners out there?
Oh, no, look, stay safe. And don't get too stressed about those exams.
Are they coming up? Is it exam season soon?
It's coming soon.
Oh, gosh. I hope you are all prepared, folks. All right. Thank you so much, Stephen. I really appreciate your time. Take care, man.
Kia ora, tata.
Kia ora. All right, folks. That was Professor Stephen Robertson from the University's Department of Child Health and Pediatrics coming on to talk about mouldy genomics and public health. He is going to be talking more in depth about these topics at Umbrello's Kitchen and Bar later tonight at 5:30 as part of the Thirst for Knowledge Corridor series. He has requested a track from Sinead O'Connor and Roger Waters of Pink Floyd fame, Mother. So we're going to hear that and we'll have some clowning around at 9:45. I'll see you then at 1:45. Ka kite.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcasts.